The case began with a young man asking for help on a clear October day in Taylorsville, Mississippi. Rasheem Carter walked into the local police department and told officers that men had been chasing him through the area. He said he feared for his life. He said he did not feel safe. Hours later, he spoke with his mother on the phone and told her that the same people were after him again. He asked her to guide him. He told her he loved her. Then the line went quiet. For nearly 1 month, the search for him rose and fell across wooded land, back roads, and small patches of rural terrain. When remains were found in November 2022, the discovery only deepened the confusion. The condition of the scene raised questions that spread far beyond one small Mississippi town. Each answer offered by authorities seemed to create another gap. Each gap widened the call for clarity. What happened to Rasheem Carter between the moment he asked for help and the moment his body was found is the core of this story. Chapter 1, The Last Known Path. The morning of October 1st, 2022, began without any public sign of trouble in Taylorsville, Mississippi. It was a town shaped by long stretches of highway, quiet sawmills, small workyards, and scattered local businesses that moved at the same steady pace every day. People who drove along the main road usually passed through quickly. They rarely stopped unless they needed fuel or tools. Life moved in familiar rhythms. That was the landscape as Rasheem Carter stepped into it for one of his temporary labor assignments. He was 25 years old. He had been working in the area for several weeks. His duties were tied to a local lumber operation that relied on rotating crews. The days were long and physical. He would often speak with his mother about the work and about his plans to move toward the next stage of his life. His mother described him as focused. She said he was building toward something better. That sense of momentum made the events of October even harder to process later. By the middle of the month, the routine that had carried him through the job began to show strain. The sheriff later confirmed that there had been at least one workplace dispute. The details of that dispute remain a mix of statements and counterstatements. Law enforcement noted conflict, but did not confirm any direct link to danger. Family members believed the tension was serious. What is known is that on the morning of October 1st, Rasheem Carter believed he was being followed. Late in the morning, he walked toward the Taylorsville Police Department. He did not wait long before asking officers for help. According to the department's statements, he told them that men in trucks were chasing him. He gave enough detail to show fear. Officers later said that he seemed paranoid, but did not appear to be in immediate danger. They said they suggested he find a ride out of town. They said they did not have cause to detain him for his own safety. That choice would remain central to later debate. After leaving the station, he made his way toward nearby businesses. Cameras later captured him at a gas station and convenience spot in the area. He seemed alert. He moved with purpose. The footage did not offer sound, so no one outside the investigation ever heard what he may have said. There is no confirmed report of him entering any dispute or confrontation during that time. He remained alone. From that point forward, his final hours moved through only a few confirmed touchpoints. The most significant was the phone call he made to his mother. During that call, he told her that the same men were after him again. He sounded frightened. He asked her for guidance on where to go and what to do. She tried to calm him and urged him to find a safe place. Her account of that call is consistent in every retelling and remains a core part of the timeline. He ended the call by telling her he loved her. Then the line disconnected. After that call, his movements were no longer captured by cameras or witnesses. He disappeared into a wooded stretch outside town. Search efforts did not begin instantly. For several days, the case moved without coordinated urgency. When his mother arrived in Taylorsville to seek answers, she found that the situation was already growing more complicated. Local officers said they had no evidence of foul play. They pointed to the possibility that he had become disoriented or distressed. The family maintained that he had been in danger. These two viewpoints never aligned. In early November 2022, 1 month after he vanished, a property owner reported finding remains in a wooded area south of town. Deputies arrived on site and secured the ground. The area consisted of tall grass, scattered brush, and thin lines of trees that gave limited visibility. According to law enforcement statements, the remains were not intact. They were separated over a small radius of land. The condition of the scene made clear identification more difficult. Despite this, early public remarks from the sheriff suggested no evidence of foul play. Those remarks carried immediate weight. Residents heard them before the family received a full account of the condition of the scene. The sheriff described the possibility of animal activity. He said the distribution of remains could have occurred after death. The family challenged that narrative from the beginning. They had not yet reviewed medical examiner documentation. They only knew their son had been found in a state that did not fit the story of a simple disappearance. Deputies photographed the site. They collected fragments of clothing and personal items. The scene was processed under daylight and through standard procedure. Even so, the collection area was limited by the landscape. Finding remains scattered across brush and open patches meant that investigators could not reconstruct the exact sequence of events. That limitation would hang over everything that followed. The discovery scene did not offer obvious answers. Weather records showed that the area had experienced rain and wind in the weeks after his disappearance. Organic material would have been affected. Wildlife movement could not be ruled out. These points were noted in early internal assessments. At the same time, the condition of the remains created room for interpretation. Some observers believed the distribution suggested interference by more than natural forces. Others held to the idea of environmental spread. In the days after discovery, officers revisited his final contacts. They checked with businesses, they reviewed earlier footage, they retraced his path from the police department to the gas station and beyond. None of these steps produced a new sighting. No camera captured him walking toward the location where his remains were found. No witness came forward to describe a pursuit or confrontation in those final hours. The timeline ended with silence. As news of the recovery spread, the family increased pressure on law enforcement to treat the case with greater seriousness. They said the conditions of the remains showed clear evidence of foul play. They said his earlier request for help should have triggered protection. They said he had been failed at multiple points. Local authorities did not change their public stance. They repeated that no confirmed evidence supported a homicide. They said the investigation was ongoing. These two positions set the tone for the months to come. By mid-November, the official collection of remains was complete. Additional searches were carried out to determine if more fragments were present. Some items were found at a later date. The sheriff acknowledged that new findings were unusual, but did not shift the nature of the investigation. The family continued to challenge this. They said the staggered discovery raised serious questions about how the original search was handled. What can be confirmed is that the first chapter of the case ended with more questions than answers. A young man sought help. He reported that he was being chased, he disappeared. His remains were found in a condition that did not fit any simple explanation. His last call expressed fear. His mother tried to guide him from miles away. The police assessment of his state did not result in intervention. The terrain where he was found did not offer evidence of how he reached it. The stakes at this point were clear. Did law enforcement misjudge a vulnerable man? Did the scene reflect environmental forces alone, or did the condition of the remains point to something more? Did early statements shape the future direction of the case in ways that limited later inquiry? None of these questions were answered in the first phase of the investigation. The chapter closed on a divided landscape. The family stood firm that something violent had been done to him. Law enforcement maintained that no proof supported that claim. The public waited for clarity. The medical examiner had not yet delivered the detailed findings that would form the next stage of the story. The ground had been searched, documented, and sealed, but the truth of what happened between his plea for help and the discovery of his body remained out of reach. The path from here would move into deeper forensic territory. It would reveal more about his life, his movements, the conflicts he described, and the leads that emerged in the wake of the autopsy. It would also show how each piece of information created new pressure points in the search for answers. The next phase would expand the investigation while also exposing its limits. The unresolved tension at the close of this chapter forms the question that drives everything forward. If the scene did not offer proof of what happened, then where would the truth come from, and who would be responsible for finding it? Chapter 2, The Weight of the Evidence. Rasheem Carter had grown up in Fayette, Mississippi, a town known for long roads, modest homes, and family roots that stretched across generations. He was 25 years old at the time of his death. He had a young daughter. He had studied at Alcorn State University and had built a reputation for being focused and loyal to the people around him. He dreamed of starting his own seafood business. He spoke often about wanting to build something stable for his daughter. Those details became central when the investigation turned toward understanding what kind of life he had been living before his disappearance. Friends and relatives described him as steady. They said he was the type of person who worked through problems calmly. They said he did not create conflict. These observations became part of the official profile collected by investigators. They helped shape questions about what he may have been experiencing in the days before his death. His mother said he had no history of paranoia. She said his fear on the final call was real. Law enforcement did not dispute her account. They only stated that they could not confirm the presence of anyone threatening him at the time he sought help. His work assignment in Taylorsville placed him in an unfamiliar town. The job was tied to a local lumber company that required contractors for heavy labor. He had taken the position to save money quickly and to help fund his business goals. He planned to return home once the contract ended. Coworkers described the environment as tough, but typical for the region. These descriptions became part of interviews conducted after his disappearance. Several workers recalled that he kept to himself. Others noted that he had mentioned tension with at least one colleague. Authorities later confirmed that there had been a dispute at the workplace. They did not release the full details of that exchange. They stated that there was no evidence linking any coworker to his disappearance. The family held a different view. They believed the conflict was serious enough to be considered a potential factor. That disagreement became one of the early divides between public statements and family concerns. Detectives interviewed multiple individuals connected to the job site. None of those interviews led to charges or identified suspects. The name of the coworker involved in the dispute surfaced in public conversation, but the sheriff emphasized that no evidence tied anyone to a crime. The timeline of events on October 1st was already partially established by Chapter 1. What is important here is the investigative process applied afterward. Once his remains were discovered in early November, law enforcement moved into evidence analysis. The condition of the remains raised immediate questions for the medical examiner. The body was not intact. Portions were found at different distances. Some bones showed marks that investigators believed were consistent with animal activity. The family disputed that explanation. They argued that the separation of body parts could not be fully explained by animals. Law enforcement held their position until the release of official autopsy findings. The autopsy conducted by the state medical examiner noted that the remains showed signs of dismemberment. The report stated that some damage could be attributed to scavenger activity after death. It did not declare a cause of death. The examiner wrote that the findings were inconclusive. The report did not rule homicide in. It did not rule homicide out. This single document became one of the most contested pieces of the entire case. For the family, the absence of a clear cause of death was unacceptable. For authorities, it was a reflection of the condition of the remains. The investigation expanded to include digital and lab work. Detectives reviewed his phone records and attempted to reconstruct his final movements. His last call had already been documented. Beyond that call, there were no digital traces that pointed to new suspects or confirmed pursuit. His device had disconnected before he entered the wooded area. That detail limited what investigators could learn from tower data. Lab tests on clothing fragments found at the scene did not produce conclusive evidence. Soil analysis did not reveal chemical signatures associated with violent struggle. These findings were part of the official record, though many of them were not immediately released to the public. Interviews with family members helped clarify his state of mind in the hours before he vanished. His mother had already provided a detailed account of their final call. Investigators also spoke with relatives who knew him well. They confirmed he had no documented history of hallucinations or severe mental health instability. That information contradicted speculation that he may have become disoriented without external threat. Law enforcement noted the family's position, but stated publicly that they could not confirm the presence of any individuals chasing him. This conflict shaped the narrative as national attention began to rise. Authorities revisited the gas station and surrounding businesses where he had last been seen. They reviewed camera footage again. They interviewed store employees who had been present that day. None recalled seeing a confrontation. No one reported seeing trucks following him at a close distance during the window captured on video. Officers acknowledged that the wooded area where his remains were found had no cameras and no nearby witnesses. That alone left a substantial gap in the timeline. The sheriff's office conducted interviews with workers from the job site. They asked about conflicts. They asked about threats. They asked about unusual behavior. Several workers confirmed that he had seemed stressed in the days before he disappeared. They did not report seeing anyone threaten him directly. The sheriff stated that investigators found no evidence of foul play at the job site. The family did not accept this conclusion. They said his fear was real and specific. They believed investigators had not applied enough pressure to those who might have had information. Forensic specialists were consulted to interpret the condition of the remains. Expert opinions varied. Some noted that the distribution of bones could reflect the activity of animals over several weeks. Others pointed out that certain separations appeared too clean to be the result of scavengers alone. These observations were not included in the official state autopsy, but were raised by independent reviewers. They were also discussed in meetings between the family and outside experts. Law enforcement did not adopt these outside opinions into their official findings. They maintained that there was no confirmed evidence of a criminal act. The investigation reviewed weather patterns from the time of disappearance to the time of discovery. The area had experienced rainfall and wind. Those conditions could accelerate the spread of remains. They could also affect the decomposition process. Soil records showed typical moisture levels for early autumn in Mississippi. Comparison to similar cases in the region provided limited insight. No two cases shared the same environment. These points were reflected in internal notes, but did not appear in public statements. The autopsy report noted that certain organs were not recovered. It did not indicate whether they had been removed by human action or lost to environmental factors. The family interpreted the absence as evidence of harm. Authorities interpreted it as a consequence of decomposition and animal activity. The lack of a definitive forensic conclusion left the question unresolved. This disagreement became a key reason the case gained wider attention. When the family received the remains, they sought additional forensic review. They requested an independent assessment. They expressed dissatisfaction with the state's findings. They said the condition of the remains suggested far more violence than officials acknowledged. Independent examiners who reviewed available materials stated that the cause of death could not be determined, but agreed that the case required deeper inquiry. These expert opinions did not replace the official autopsy. They added weight to the family's call for a broader investigation. Meanwhile, the sheriff's office released statements to clarify their position. They said investigators had followed standard procedure. They said the search area had been properly surveyed. They said the autopsy findings did not point toward homicide. They emphasized that the case was still active. Each statement attempted to define the narrative. Each statement was met with skepticism from the family and their supporters. This tension became more visible as the case entered regional and national news. Authorities also conducted background interviews to better understand his final days. They contacted individuals who had interacted with him shortly before his disappearance. Most described him as normal and focused. Some noted that he seemed worried but did not explain why. These interviews added color to the timeline, but did not produce leads. None of the individuals reported seeing suspicious vehicles or unknown men in the area. The absence of witness confirmation weakened the pursuit theory in the eyes of law enforcement. It did not weaken it for the family. The investigation also reviewed any past incidents in the region involving similar patterns. There was no record of attacks matching his description. There were no reports of coordinated pursuit involving trucks. These findings were factored into the sheriff's statements. They reinforced the view that no criminal pattern was visible. The family argued that absence of evidence did not equal evidence of absence. They insisted that the lack of prior incidents did not rule out targeted harm. Lab tests on remains were limited by the condition of the body. Toxicology could not be completed in full. Certain samples were incomplete. The absence of soft tissue limited what could be extracted. These constraints were documented. They added to the difficulty of reaching any definitive conclusion. For investigators, this was an obstacle. For the family, it was another sign that more resources were needed. The sheriff's office maintained that the case would remain open. They said they were waiting on additional lab work. They said they would follow any new leads. At the same time, they did not announce suspects or persons of interest. They did not declare the case a homicide. They did not change their early assessment. This steady position contributed to rising public pressure. As coverage expanded, more people began to question the investigative process. They asked whether the initial interaction between Rasheem Carter and the police had been handled properly. They asked whether more should have been done when he said he was being chased. These questions did not have clear answers. Official statements insisted that officers had followed the law. The family insisted that the law had failed him. By this stage, the case had gained enough attention that civil rights advocates began monitoring developments. They did not intervene in the investigation, but issued public statements urging transparency. They highlighted the gaps between official accounts and family accounts. They emphasized the need for continued forensic review. Their involvement did not redefine the case, but amplified the call for clarity. As Chapter 2 closes, the investigation stands at a critical point. The profile of Rasheem Carter shows a young man with goals, stability, and strong family ties. The leads that emerged after his disappearance pointed in many directions, but produced no suspects. The autopsy revealed dismemberment, but could not confirm the cause of death. Interview turns clarified his state of mind, but could not identify the men he feared. Laboratory results narrowed possibilities, but did not deliver answers. The unresolved question continues to grow. Do the forensic inconsistencies point toward human involvement, or were investigative gaps widening the uncertainty? Every piece of evidence carries weight, but none of it connects into a single clear line. That gap between evidence and truth is where Chapter 3 will begin. Chapter 3, The Search for Accountability. The morning after the autopsy report became public, the Carter family held a press conference outside the state building where they had received the results. Reporters gathered around them as the family's attorney read the key findings aloud. The cause of death had been listed as undetermined. The examiner had not declared homicide. The examiner had not declared a natural cause. The uncertainty in the report confirmed what the family feared most. The truth about how he died was still missing. His mother stood at the center of the gathering. Her voice was steady but heavy. She said her son had been found in a condition that no mother should ever have to face. She said the explanation offered by authorities did not make sense. She said the family believed her son had been harmed. Her statements reflected grief, anger, and determination. They also marked a turning point. What had been a small town investigation now moved onto a larger national stage. Civil rights advocates began to track the case more closely. They issued statements urging deeper review. They called for federal oversight. They asked for a more transparent release of evidence. National outlets took interest in the timeline, the condition of the remains, and the early statements from the sheriff. Coverage widened. The public began asking harder questions about how the investigation had been handled from the start. These questions did not come from speculation. They came from the contradictions between official accounts and the family's experience. The sheriff responded with another statement. He said that investigators had followed all available leads. He said there was still no evidence of foul play. He said wildlife activity could explain the state of the remains. He repeated these points during interviews. His statements were brief and direct. They did not shift as public pressure increased. That consistency drew both support from some residents and criticism from others. Advocates pointed to the fact that additional remains were recovered after the initial search. They said this showed that the search had not been thorough. They asked why the later discovery had not changed the sheriff's position. The sheriff said the land was difficult terrain. He said that it was possible for remains to be found later, even after a proper search. These explanations did not quiet the discussion. They added to the tension surrounding the case. Meanwhile, the family's attorney requested access to all remaining evidence. He asked for more detailed photographs of the scene. He asked for full documentation of the autopsy process. He asked for communication logs between investigators. These requests were part of a structured effort to understand every step taken after the disappearance. They reflected a need for clarity. They also signaled that the family intended to push the case as far as they legally could. In the middle of these developments, a second set of remains was released to the family. These remains had been found in the same general area as the first discovery. Their recovery deepened concerns about the completeness of the original search. Independent forensic specialists reviewed available images and notes. They stated that the condition of the remains raised legitimate questions that should be examined by additional experts. They did not declare homicide. They did not confirm criminal action. They did state that further review was justified. The family called for a full federal investigation. They requested involvement from the Department of Justice. They said the contradictions between official statements and independent observations demonstrated a need for outside oversight. Federal authorities acknowledged the request, but did not immediately announce any formal review. The lack of a clear response added to public frustration. During this period, national media outlets conducted their own inquiries. They spoke with the family. They spoke with local residents. They spoke with legal experts who reviewed portions of the autopsy report. They built timelines based on public statements and documented movements. These reports drew attention to several gaps. They noted that the condition of the remains did not perfectly match the sheriff's explanation. They noted that the early statements about the absence of foul play were made before the autopsy was complete. They noted that his call for help at the police station had not triggered protective measures. None of these reports declared wrongdoing. They simply documented the inconsistencies. Community members organized events in support of the family. They held gatherings calling for answers. They placed signs along roads near the wooded area. They spoke with reporters about concerns for safety and justice. The events remained peaceful. They showed the emotional weight the case carried. They also showed the divide between those who trusted the official investigation and those who believed it needed outside intervention. The family continued to speak with investigators. They asked for updates. They pressed for new searches. They challenged the explanations they believed were incomplete. The sheriff repeated that the case would stay open. He said investigators would remain available for new leads. He said no new evidence had emerged. These exchanges did not move the case forward, but kept it in public view. In early 2023, the family traveled to state offices to again ask for expanded forensic review. They requested that additional specialists examine the remains. They asked for a more thorough analysis of bone patterns. They asked for an assessment of whether any marks could be associated with tools rather than animals. These requests were rooted in the belief that the case required deeper scrutiny. State authorities listened, but did not commit to revising the autopsy findings. Meanwhile, the workplace angle was revisited by journalists. They interviewed former co-workers. They asked about the dispute that had occurred before his disappearance. Responses varied. Some said it was minor. Others said he had seemed uneasy in the days leading up to October 1st. None of the statements included accusations. None provided evidence of a coordinated threat. The sheriff repeated that no information from the workplace pointed toward foul play. Still, the workplace remained a point of public interest because it was one of the last known stressors in his life. The wooded area where his body was found also became a subject of renewed discussion. Some questioned whether the location suggested he had been trying to flee further into rural terrain. Others questioned how he had traveled that far on foot if he had been actively pursued. These questions were raised by residents and reporters. They were not raised in official documents. They were part of the broader attempt to understand what had happened in the hours after his final call. The family's attorney pursued additional avenues. He contacted outside forensic professionals. He arranged meetings with civil rights groups that could help press for transparency. He gathered documents, interviews, and statements from the timeline. His goal was to create a detailed record of everything that had occurred after the disappearance. He said the investigation needed to be reviewed from the beginning. Law enforcement did not comment on these efforts. National attention increased again when networks aired longer segments on the case. These segments focused on the unanswered questions. They covered the early police contact, they discussed the autopsy findings, they interviewed experts who said that undetermined cause of death cases require careful, ongoing review. The coverage did not offer new evidence, it offered visibility. That visibility placed pressure on local authorities to address public concern. The sheriff met with reporters to reassert the position of his office. He said that every piece of evidence had been reviewed. He said that lab results did not point toward homicide. He said that no suspects had been identified. He repeated that the condition of the remains could be explained by the environment. His statements remained consistent, even as the scrutiny around them rose. This consistency angered some residents and reassured others. By spring of 2023, the case had entered a stage where progress depended on new evidence. None had surfaced. The family renewed their call for federal review. They traveled to public events to share their story. They met with advocates who understood the challenges of cases labeled undetermined. They stressed that they were not asking for speculation. They were asking for a clear and full investigation. The attorney released a public letter summarizing the family's position. He wrote that the condition of the remains warranted expanded inquiry. He wrote that the autopsy's conclusions did not align with the physical state of the body. He wrote that the family would continue to push for transparency. This letter circulated widely. It amplified the core question of the case. If the autopsy could not explain how he died, then what could? At the same time, investigators confirmed that they had not ruled out any possibilities. They said the case file remained active. They said they were willing to examine any new information. These statements reflected procedural accuracy. They did not point toward forward movement. They left the case suspended between official conclusions and public doubt. Meanwhile, experts outside the investigation provided measured commentary. They explained that undetermined cause of death cases can remain unresolved for years. They said the condition of the remains can erase evidence of trauma. They said wildlife activity can alter bone patterns. They also said that some patterns require closer analysis to determine whether they reflect natural processes or something else. These comments underscored the complexity of the case without offering definitive answers. Community members continued to show support. They held candlelight gatherings. They created murals in his memory. They spoke about the importance of justice and transparency. These events maintained public attention. They also provided a space for family and supporters to process grief. As the months passed, federal authorities had not announced a formal review. Advocates noted that many cases are reviewed quietly before any public statement is made. They encouraged patience. The family acknowledged this, but said they could not wait silently. They continued to press for answers. Throughout this period, the central contradictions remained. The autopsy did not confirm homicide. The family believed homicide was clear. Law enforcement pointed to environmental factors. Independent observers pointed to possible inconsistencies. No evidence emerged to fully resolve the dispute. The case remained open, but unmoving. The final days of 2023 brought renewed calls for review. The family appeared at another press event with supporters and legal counsel. They repeated their core position. They said that Rashim Carter deserved a full and complete investigation. They said they would not stop until the truth was known. Their voices carried the weight of a year spent searching for clarity. As the case stands, several facts are clear. He asked for help. He expressed fear. He disappeared. He was found in a condition that raised serious questions. The cause of death remains undetermined. No suspects have been identified. The investigation remains open. The question that closes this series is the same question that has guided the family from the start. If the official findings do not explain what happened, then where will the answers come from, and what will it take for them to be found? A young Black man in his mid-20s, clean-cut and serious, standing on a quiet Mississippi roadside in daylight. He wears a simple work jacket and jeans. His expression is alert and concerned, as if he is trying to understand what is happening around him. His posture is upright, with one hand slightly raised for emphasis, as though explaining or seeking help. He stands near the entrance of a small-town police station, captured in the moment he turns toward the building for assistance. His gaze shifts between the police station and the open road, showing uncertainty and urgency without depicting harm. A clean daytime Mississippi setting, clear blue sky, a quiet two-lane road, a modest brick police station with a bright, visible police sign, pine trees lining the distance, two parked cars, no people around. Everything is sharp, well-lit, and factual. Bright natural daylight, soft shadows, clear visibility, neutral documentary tone with no dramatic fog, balanced exposure that highlights details. A calm environment contrasting with the subject's emotional tension. Documentary realism, hyper-detailed textures, natural skin tone, clear journalistic feel. No heavy drama, clean color grading with mild contrast. 35mm lens, eye-level angle, medium-wide framing, crisp depth of field with everything in clear focus. 4K resolution, sharp documentary detail, subtle film grain, neutral color palette, factual clarity. Overlay title, clean documentary style, The Murder of Rashim Carter,